Angela Hewitt played Chopin's Impromptu No. 1 in A-flat. Now, the Early Music Show with Robert Hollingworth.
At school, in chemistry lessons, instead of writing up experiments, I used to list my all-time favourite cricketers. Mr. Morris encouraged my parents to let me give up chemistry. On going to university to read music, my tutor John Milsom, perhaps recognising this penchant for lists, asked me what I thought were the greatest books of madrigals ever. And while we argued about second and third place, there was never any question of what came first. Monteverdi's fourth book of madrigals from 1603. It has unequalled variety, a virtuosity that frankly leaves you breathless. But what hit me as a 20-year-old setting up my own solo voice ensemble was its emotional power. Here's the book's opening work, and you can follow all the texts and their translations on our webpage, bbc.co.uk/radio3, then following links to the Early Music Show. Oh, sorrowful parting, ah, end of my life. Do I leave you and not die? Yet I feel a lively death that gives life to sorrow. Poet Guarini's immortal deaths, embodied in the rocking syncopations and dissonance at the end of the first madrigal of Monteverdi's fourth book from 1603, sung by Ifa Giolini, directed by Robert Hollingworth. Hang on, isn't that me? The madrigal is a much misunderstood genre. In England, we tend to see it with fallah-tinted glasses, forgetting that the English madrigal is a late offshoot of the Italian version. The original begins in the 1520s, that's some 80 years before Monteverdi's fourth book, and the pieces are noted for their high poetic level. This was, after all, the period when some Italian thinkers began to push for the language of their forebears, Dante and Petrarch, to be accepted as a sort of standard Italian. Madrigals were initially written for amateurs to sing. Affordable music printing came along at exactly the same time in the 1520s, and the idle families of the merchant middle class could afford to buy and sing from these music books. But by the time we get to Monteverdi, a number of professional ensembles are emerging, based at the courts of first Ferrara and then nearby Mantua, where Monteverdi was based. Quite apart from the subtlety required to sing this music, its often florid texture instantly sets it apart from your run-of-the-mill madrigal. In this next piece, runs of semiquavers paint the flight of a little bird which sings so sweetly. If it had a human soul, it would say, "I burn with love."
Maria, 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 Ma
Regia l'anima mia, sung by the Consort of Music from their groundbreaking 1984 recording of Monteverdi's Fourth Book of Madrigals. And before that, we heard Quell'Augelin, sung by Concerto Italiano. The madrigal developed throughout different Italian cities over the course of the 16th century, composers pushing the boundaries of descriptive writing to colour the text. One slightly obscure technique they used was to make visual jokes that only the singer would appreciate. Monteverdi doesn't indulge in these much, but he doffs his cap to the tradition at the beginning of Luci Serene Chiare. Serene eyes, you set me on fire, but my heart feels pleasure in the fire, not pain. That first word, luci, literally lights or eyes, is set as two semibreves, round notes, so the singer would actually see two eyes staring out of the page. Here they are.
Oh!
If I die, you'll only hear a single miserable alas. But if you want us to give each other life, you shall have 1,000 tender alases. Innuendo from poet Guarini, with a heartfelt shriek of passion from the middle voice at the end. Monteverdi is almost sending up erotic madrigals there, a genre which he comes back to and beautifully trumps later in this fourth book of madrigals from 1603, the subject of the early music show today. Italian group La Veneziana were the performers, preceded by the consort of music in Luci Serene Chiare. If 1066 and all that covered music, it would say that the Renaissance finished promptly at the end of 1599, and Monteverdi awoke the next morning with the cry, Mamma mia, it's the Baroque! It's certainly convenient that the first opera was written in 1600, but throughout the previous century, theoreticians and philosophers were engaging with the issue of how best to set text to music, and whether ancient Greek tragedy, remember how Renaissance thinkers always look back to the Greeks for inspiration, might in fact not have just been orated, but sung over a simple accompaniment. The problem was this. The predominant form of Renaissance musical expression was polyphony, several voices in a net of sound, each voice separately singing the same text at slightly different times from the others. Some thinkers found this very hard. Why, asked Vincenzo Galilei, the astronomer's father, should we persist in expressing the feelings of a single person through polyphony, when the ancients evoked the most lively passions with only a single voice supported by a lyre? We must renounce counterpoint and return to the simplicity of the word. In his third book from 11 years earlier, Monteverdi had experimented with such direct delivery through single voices, but never lasting more than a phrase here or there before the group took over again. In this fourth book, he tried simply printing text for all voices under a single chord, the voices declaiming the phrase together. This is how Sfogavo con le stelle begins. Crying to the stars, a lovesick man spoke of his grief. If only, just as you stars reflect the rare beauty of the woman I love, you could also show her my ardent flames, you would make her compassionate, just as you make me affectionate. touches of choral recitative there, Monteverdi's way of making the words clearer. As a performer of this repertoire myself, I can't help being fascinated, critical, and very enthusiastic about what other ensembles bring to this repertoire. That was Concerto Italiano again, the first of now three Italian ensembles recording late Renaissance madrigals. Their singers have little of the immersion in choral music that British professional singers do by the time they're age 22 or so, and there's little useful training from conservatoires in Italy for early vocal music either, yet their voices sound absolutely right. The approach of their director, Rinaldo Alessandrini, is very much based on a close examination of the poetry. This has to be right, it's where Monteverdi started. The question is just one of degree, in that Alessandrini, to point out words or to bring out a gesture in the music, sometimes allows himself considerable rhythmic license, which stops Monteverdi's flow. He also often conducted his ensemble, which is strange for chamber music. But there's a beguiling flair and a slightly wanton sound to the top line, soprano Rossana Bertini, who also sings in La Veneziana. Back to the idea of clarifying the texture for the sake of the words. In Anima Mia Perdona, nearly the whole piece is treated in a declamatory style, the top voice leading and the others following, a favourite device of Monteverdi's mentor at Mantua, the Flem Jacques de Vert. Its text is about a female lover unable to express her true feelings for the man who loves her and afraid that she's putting him off. Come on, girls, we need a bit of clarity. If he wants revenge, she says, what greater vengeance can he have than his own suffering, which will hurt her more than him? Yeah, right. Now, having set up this very declamatory style, right at the end on the words, and the sorrows and pain that you feel are my torments, not yours, Monteverdi can't contain himself any longer and explodes into the most intense piece of polyphonic writing I know.
Come sei tu, 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 come sei tu
and the sorrows and pain that you feel are my torments, not yours. I Fagiolini in Anima Mia Perdona from Monteverdi's amazing fourth book of madrigals, our subject on the Early Music Show today, presented by me, Robert Hollingworth. The reciting texture that dominates that piece is wonderfully interrupted at the end there with such dissonant polyphony, not just interesting chords, but one line working against the others, counterpoint. So despite all the philosophical chat, Monteverdi still had use of traditional means to deliver musical and emotional impact. He was never so wowed by a fashion or theory that he lost sight of that. Music before style. Schoenberg would have been proud of him. In fact, it was this very madrigal that led to a pamphlet being published complaining about some of its writing. "It's against the rules of polyphony," said conservative critic Artusi. Monteverdi never really found the time to reply in detail, but others did. "Rules, schmules," they said. That was for the old style of writing. This was a new type of music in which more daring effects were allowed because they expressed the text better. They could have gone on to say that Monteverdi's dissonance is so beautifully set out acoustically that its effect is doubly strong. When Monteverdi arrived at the Mantuan court in 1590, aged 23, the music-loving duke was starting to expand his own musical establishment to ape the court of nearby Ferrara, whose ensemble came to be called the Concerto delle Donne, the Consort of Women, because of the brilliance of their lady singers. They specialised in performing both heavily ornamented versions of existing pieces and also new works in a very harmonically advanced vein. And they also performed in a dramatic, if not specifically staged, manner. Monteverdi must surely have heard them, and indeed dedicated this fourth book to an academy, a drinking and thinking club, based in Ferrara. This next piece brings to mind that Ferrarese female ensemble's virtuosic style. It's not a piece to try at home. "I'm a young girl, and I laugh and sing. Thus sang my sweet shepherdess, and my heart at that song sang like a merry little bird too. I am young and laugh in the beautiful springtime of love that blossoms in your beautiful eyes." "But flee," replied the shepherdess, "for in these eyes there will never be springtime for you."
Subitamente, Two madrigals from Monteverdi's fourth book, the florid Io mi son giovinetta, sung by Concerto Italiano, followed by more biting dissonance in La piaga con il cuore, which describes the wound in my heart as a blow struck by your eyes. How come we're both guilty, but only I feel pain? That was performed by the Consort of Music, a group started in 1969 by Anthony Rulli while the Della Consort was still going strong. Rulli's group was almost the only way of hearing this repertoire on disc until the 1990s. When Concerto Italiano then came along, there was much excitement at hearing native Italians perform their own repertoire. But let's remember the Consort's great sense of style, intelligence and passion, if sometimes expressed in a rather stylized way, which, for all we know, may be spot on. They also had a vocal lineup that not only featured Emma Kirkby on the top, but also the best solution to the problematic middle line. Middle lines of Monteverdi madrigals, and indeed much other Renaissance music, need enough weight to act as an equal partner to the part below them, which is a sort of baritenor, but also a light touch to fill in the texture when behaving more like an alto. The countertenors used by many ensembles these days really don't fulfil this role, and Joseph Cornwell's high tenor for the consort was a winner. Two more works of madrigal legend status now from Monteverdi's fourth book. The second is the infamous Sì ch'io vorrei morire. It starts with an orgasm graphically set by Monteverdi and finishes with a second in the course of just 4 minutes. Italians. In between, every trick in the book to produce musical versions of squeezes, caresses, scarcely held restraint and rushing passion. It's testimony to Monteverdi that 400 years on, one could hardly imagine a more direct setting of these words. Before that, some strong images of nature, in the service of love, of course, which draw from Monteverdi very literal, descriptive writing. At a single glance of those beautiful eyes, the air smiles, ride l'aria, the sea grows calm. Only I have eyes with tears and sadness. Certainly, when you were born so stony-hearted, so was born my death.
Oh.
the infamous Sì ch'io vorrei morire, Concerto Italiano there, and before that A un giro sol, sung by the Consort of Music. If you thought it was a British phenomenon to see so many of the same singers in different ensembles, you'll be surprised to hear that in 1995, the singers of Alessandrini's Concerto Italiano set up their own group called La Veneziana, directed by Concerto Italiano's countertenor, Claudio Cavina. They recorded Monteverdi, Gesualdo and Marenzio in widely credited interpretations that clearly owe something to the very text-based approach of Alessandrini, but with a softer, more chamber music touch. The enthusiasm for Italian ensembles hasn't stopped the British ensemble I Fagiolini from releasing its own Monteverdi series, inspired by its dramatic presentations of Renaissance polyphony in programmes such as The Full Monteverdi and Talis in Wonderland. I guess a crucial difference in approach is that the Italian groups enjoy breaking the pulse to characterise a moment here or there, as in that enormous unwritten gap after the first C in the piece we've just heard. There's contemporary evidence for effective touches like this, though again it's a question of degree. The Brits prefer to allow the flow of Monteverdi's musical line, though both the Consort and I Fagiolini, which I direct, I should just admit, would insist that this approach is based on respect for the way effects are painted in the music already. Of course, both approaches can yield inspiring results, and how things have moved on over 20 years so that the listener has these different options to choose from. How all of us wish we could pop back to the Mantua of 1603, Monteverdi just appointed maestro, his wife singing in the ensemble, and listen to these intense jewels of concentrated passion distilled into vocal music. To finish today's show, the last two pieces from Monteverdi's fourth book. In Piagne e Sospira, we hear a rare touch of chromatic Monteverdi, perhaps influenced by the harmonic experiments at nearby Ferrara. Worth remembering that the extreme works of arch-experimenter Gesualdo date from his visit there. In this madrigal, a sliding upwards phrase to colour the word piagne, she wept, works its way through all the voices. The shepherdess bitterly carves the story of her fate into the bark of a tree, until, in a little touch of genius, Monteverdi stops the contrapuntal story and sets the last words a simple recitation. Rereading her own words, she covered her cheeks with tears. Before that, one of my favourite and understated Monteverdi madrigals in a sort of G major. The brightness of this, after most of the previous dark tones in the book, is like a shaft of sunlight low across a stormy sky. Far from you, I am consumed with sorrow. Return. And if fate wills me still to suffer when near you, let your beautiful eyes shine and sparkle so that they burn me. But I die happy.
Thank you. Yeah. Hello and welcome to BBC Radio 3 Through the Night with me, Jonathan Swain. A mainly Norwegian affair now, a recent concert from Bergen with the Bergen Philharmonic conducted by Neymar Jervi. The non-Norwegian in the programme is the Max Bruch First Violin Concerto, but surrounding it, music by Johan Svensson and a symphony by Johan Halvorsen. Svensson himself at first planned to be a violinist, but paralysis in one hand forced him to give up the fiddle for composition. The paralysis eventually left him, and he spent the rest of his life playing, conducting and composing, the last part of his life in Copenhagen. He often came to London and knew Wagner well. In fact, this piece of his Carnival in Paris, was written in Wagner's Bayreuth. Thank you.